parties. And these parties, they start lovely, but they get druggy and they get ugly and they get bloody. The priest just kind of laughed. The deacon caught a draft. She crashed into the Easter Mass with her hair done up in broken glass. She was limping left on broken heels, and she said, "Father, can I tell your congregation how a resurrection really..."
Hello, and welcome to the third episode of the QB2 Experience podcast. My name is Salvatore Stefanelli. I am one of the hosts. Joining me on the line is my fantastic co-host, Jim Sonnes. Jim, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Sal, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. First off, I just want to apologize to all four of our listeners, and especially yourself, for the fact that I never knew how to pronounce your last name.
Oh, no. I never even noticed.
Since, like, the beginning of time, I always thought it was Jim Sonnes. But apparently, I was completely wrong on that, so I got it right this time, I believe.
Do you want to know what's bad, Sal?
What's that?
I didn't even notice that you weren't saying it that way, because I've lived my entire life with no one ever saying it correctly, so I just kind of like, I go Cutler on it, you know? I just stop caring, because I just don't even notice it, you know? And sometimes, you don't always want to go full Jay Cutler, but there are some situations in which, you know, that can be good in life. And I feel like the pronunciation of my last name is a good spot for me to go Cutler.
I mean, I just feel like a bad, you know, podcast host, I guess. Because whenever I go on podcasts, the very first question that I'm asked is, how do you pronounce your last name?
Well, I would have butchered yours too if I had to just read it phonetically. So I think we're on equal footing here.
All right, so now that we got that out of the way, I feel like this is probably going to be the best podcast we've ever done history of this show.
Hands down.
I mean, we have a very small sample size to go off. It hasn't been the best so far, so the expectations are low.
That's right.
We're just going to like shoot through the moon with this one.
Bound to happen. There is no other alternative.
So for, now, like I said, the four of you out there that listen to this show, you know the rundown. We recommend a couple of streamers for your QB2 slot and your two quarterback roster. We like to go mention one guy that we're not that high on that we would bench or fade if we had better options. Each week we take the beginning of the show to kind of just run down and recap the week's performances prior. So for those of you that were listening to the theme song for this week, it's How a Resurrection Really Feels from the Holt Steady. That song is from their album Separation Sunday. And that line in particular is in relation to Tyrod Taylor, who last week we came on the show, pretty much wrote a funeral for his fantasy production this year and recommended you bench him against the New York Jets. Turns out he was the best fantasy quarterback we talked about, and that's including our recommended streamers of the week.
Man, he was so good, too. And, like, I guess, like, looking back on it and trying to investigate, you know, the process behind benching him, part of it was that Cordy Glenn, their left tackle, was out. Sammy Watkins was still hurt, and he didn't look 100% in that game. He only played 75% of the snaps. So I guess, like, the process on it to me wasn't bad. The result was just really, really good for Tyrod Taylor. And we both love Tyrod, so I'm disappointed that, you know, our recommendations weren't that great. And I hope that, you know, it worked out better for you guys than it did for us. But I think at the end of the day, we both like Tyrod enough to be very happy for him that things worked out the way they did.
Yeah, no, it was great for the results. If you decided not to listen to us and went with your gut and decided to start Tyrod Taylor against the Jets defense on a Thursday night football, feel free to send in your application to take over my spot for hosting duties on this show.
I was full accountability, Sal. It was me in the direct message chain we have who suggested benching Tyrod. So I have to take the L for that one. That's my fault. You should not bear the brunt on that one.
No, but this is our show. If one person gets something wrong, everybody gets it wrong.
Fair
enough. That's the way it's going to be. But no, do we feel – this is just going to be a quick recap because we want to get on to the rest of the show. But do we feel that it's, you know, a trend? Is Tyrod getting better, or is it just a one-game sample? Because this schedule is still kind of tough after, you know, starting this week, we've got Arizona, then New England. But then I thought week five is when it was going to soften up, not against the Jets, when he has the Rams, San Fran, and Miami's 3 games straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, in looking at that schedule, I mean, obviously the Arizona game this week is pretty difficult based on what they did to Jameis Winston last week. I mean, they just mauled him. So, like, I understand using Tyrod still, but that doesn't mean I have full faith in him, especially if Cordy Glenn isn't out. But Rex Ryan did say they hope to have him back in week three, so that'd be good. The issue is if Patrick Peterson is shadowing Sammy Watkins, which it sounds like he is going to be, that could be a big detriment to Tyrod. So it's nice to have Tyrod have that successful week two, but my level of confidence in him is still, I'm still, you know, tempering expectations, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the safe thing to do with Tyrod at this point. You know, if he's your quarterback two or quarterback one, hopefully you have a better option, a streaming guy you could put into your lineup, maybe someone we might even mention later. I'm definitely going to bench him again this week against Arizona. Mm. I'll consider starting him next week against New England, depending on what my options are again. But starting week five is when I'm really going to be salivating at Tyrod's prospects from a fantasy standpoint. All right, so that goes over our the guy we recommended you bench last week, who was the best guy we talked about, as I mentioned earlier. The two quarterbacks we recommended you stream last week were Joe Flacco and Trevor Siemian. Flacco finished the week as the quarterback 19, no, not the highest to finish, still in the quarterback 2 range, but he did get 16.19 fantasy points, which is respectable from your quarterback 2, I find. Trevor Siemian didn't fare so well in what might be the best matchup he was going to have all season long against a banged-up Indianapolis Colts secondary. He put up 11.34 fantasy points, which finished quarterback 26 for the week, so he wasn't startable. The one bright spot, though, is he did have 266 passing yards, which was, you know, the 16th most in the league. So that was one nice bright spot, but he didn't get those touchdowns, and we've seen in fantasy football, if you don't score touchdowns, you're not getting that many fantasy points.
Yeah, and the thing with that, too, is that it wasn't as if they weren't scoring. I mean, obviously, they put up 34 points in the Colts. That was good. The problem was when they got into the red zone, it was 13 rushing attempts for the Broncos compared to 6 pass attempts for Siemian. So it's hard to do a whole lot. You know, it's hard to do a whole lot when that happens. And that's something to look at, too. I probably should have put more stock in that personally with Siemian, you know, how often they would throw when they were in the red zone. And I think going forward, that will be something to kind of double check is, you know, what are the team's tendencies in the red zone? And it seems as if Denver's really going to lean on C.J. Anderson once they get there.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the Dynasty League football podcast last night, and I mentioned how all the touchdowns from the Denver Broncos have either involved C.J. Anderson rushing or the one lone passing touchdown from Denver. Or if they've been defensive scores. There's not really been a whole lot of positive coming from Trevor Siemian in terms of passing touchdowns. I'm just not really sure that's going to change for the rest of the year. We kind of pretty much talked about at the beginning of the season, Trevor Siemian is a guy that you don't really have a whole lot of expectations in. It's going to be more of a game manager type. The defense is going to win games for them. And the running game in C.J. Anderson, it's pretty much been exactly as we predicted it would be in. There was rumblings today I saw on Twitter that, you know, Paxton Lynch might be getting close to prepared to start. So if you're in a two-quarterback league and he's on that waiver wire, I mean, Trevor Siemian's probably like your quarterback 3 or quarterback 4. So he's someone you can just safely bench and pick up. I mean, not bench, just safely drop and pick up the upside of Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, and I do think that the word there is upside. I think that the situation in Denver is outstanding because, you know, the quarterback's not going to face negative game flow a lot. So if Paxton Lynch gets that job and has Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders healthy, then that's a really good situation for him, and that would be something to monitor going forward. And it's not nothing against Trevor Siemian. It's just he's not really, I guess, fit to be in that super – that great fantasy role. But Paxton Lynch – super efficient when he was at Memphis, a first round pick, you know, draft stock is very predictive when it comes to, you know, fantasy and real quarterback efficiency. So if Paxton Lynch does get that job, he would be in a very good spot going forward.
I know. Trevor Siemian, he is who we thought he is, a seventh rounder in his second year. And you can't really compare it apples to apples with Carson Wentz and Paxton Lynch. But if you're looking at the type of fantasy production you could get out of Paxton Lynch, I think Carson Wentz is a good comparison at this moment based on just his first two games.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we'll get rid of that, and we'll talk more about PAX and Lynch once we start the PAX and Lynch experience, probably in like week 8 or 9, if we had to take a guess. Just go over the rest of the rapid-fire recommendations of last week. One of these was – at least we had one good call last week. So it was Jimmy Garoppolo finished the week as the fantasy quarterback 8 with 21.36 fantasy points, which – probably would have been a lot higher if he didn't sit out the whole second half against the Miami Dolphins. And if you want to, you know, cheat a little bit and add Jacoby Brissett's points to Garoppolo's total, the combined, they would have finished as the quarterback 3 on the week. So that's one win for us from last week. The rest, no, Marcus Mariota, QB 18, but did score 16.62 fantasy points. So again, that's respectable for two quarterback streamer. And then, you know, we mentioned earlier there, Carson Wentz was QB 23 with 12.6 fantasy points.
Yeah, and again, for Carson Wentz, a lot of it was the offense deferring to the run when they got to the red zone. Also, a couple of field goal attempts in there, so I think that one, that's kind of the risk you run with an offense like that that has a younger quarterback. And for Garoppolo, he is now Number 5's most efficient passer of the entire year on a per drop back basis. And what that says to me, at least, is that Tom Brady, when he comes back, is going to be in a really, really good situation there in New England.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't really recommend Tom Brady as a streamer based on where he was drafted.
I'd love to.
I know, it'd be great. Last year, we could have. He was the quarterback 13 in ADP last season.
Yeah.
But this year, he was a top 8 guy, I believe. But I just want to quickly ask you one question. You mentioned Number 5 is most efficient passer.
Mm-hmm.
For people that don't really check out Number 5 on a regular basis, how can they incorporate those stats in terms of their fantasy lineup?
Yeah, so I think that the big thing as far as quarterbacks go is you want them to be efficient, and what our net expected points metric measures is efficiency, because what you want is a quarterback who can generate touchdown drives. Net expected points measures the expected points added. So let's look at Jimmy Garoppolo in week 2. I believe he had generated around 20 net expected points before his injury. What that means is that they were 20 points above expectation. And obviously what that means is, A, it's going to lead to good things for Garoppolo in terms of yardage, but also it means he's going to be generating touchdown drives. That's where you can maybe get a fluke rushing touchdown out of your quarterback. It means you can get a passing touchdown, and it gets those positive things that you want. But it also means that they're avoiding punts. It means they're avoiding interceptions, fumbles, things like that. So I think that prioritizing efficiency over volume when it comes to your quarterback is always a must. And that's why we kind of, when we're doing this podcast, we look at a lot of Vegas totals, because that's going to give us more of a sense of efficiency as opposed to volume. Whereas like if a team is a heavy underdog, you expect them to throw a lot, but those are kind of throwaway attempts. Those aren't the attempts we want for fantasy. We want high upside attempts, attempts that are happening when the team is either in a close game or leading, and you can get a lot of those from efficient passers by looking at Number 5's metrics.
So, it's a good thing that there's a website like Number 5 out there that provides those metrics, because if you just went up to someone and said, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo is the most efficient passer in the NFL, they wouldn't believe you and would just walk away from the conversation. So it's nice to have a different take on the game.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely helps me a lot to pinpoint, matchups, whether it be for season-long or daily fantasy and stuff like that. It does provide a really good crutch for fantasy knowledge.
And if you guys haven't picked out up there, Jim Saunas works for Number 5. So it's a big reason why we mention a lot of Number 5, because they have a lot of metrics we can help.
Got a stump for the company a little bit.
Exactly. You're a company man. Speaking of company man, let's focus on the two QBs, QB2 streamer recommendation picks of week 3. We mentioned them in the rapid fire from week 2. We're going to start things off with Marcus Mariota as our top streamer of the week. Jim, why don't you just give a quick rundown as to why Mariota is one of your top guys?
So we... Like we talk a lot here, and I was just referring to, we want to look for guys who are essentially, in most circumstances, favored. We're looking at Marcus Mariota, and the Titans are 1.5-point favorites over the Oakland Raiders for this week. This is only the fourth time in his entire career that Marcus Mariota will start a game in which his team is favored entering that game. And one of those games, those previous three, he was facing the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. He threw for 268 yards and 3 touchdowns, and also ran for 112 yards and a touchdown as well. Huge game. And I think you know, when you can get him in those good situations, he's a fantasy asset that you want. And Mariota's metrics so far, they're okay. He's 21st in number fires passing efficiency, but he's also he's 7th in success rate, which shows that he's being very consistent, which is something that you definitely want. So I'm liking what I'm seeing so far out of Mariota this year, and that matchup is amazing. So last year, the New Orleans Saints had the worst pass defense in the history of number fires databases dating back to the year 2000. Right now, Oakland's pass defense is twice as bad as New Orleans was last year.
Is that even possible?
Exactly. I know that that's like against Drew Brees in New Orleans, but Matt Ryan last year was pretty bad when he was playing outside of a dome, and he went in and he just stomped the Raiders. He just stomped them straight. It was amazing to watch. I didn't expect that out of Matt Ryan in a game where they were underdogs. It was outdoors. But Matt Ryan, one of the top scorers, their pass defense is legitimately wretched right now. And I think that if you're playing Daily Fantasy, Marcus Mariota definitely needs to be on your radar. But as far as season-long leagues, he's in an amazing spot this week. And I just love Marcus Mariota in general. He's kind of like, I guess I view him similar to Alex Smith, except with a bit more rushing upside. And that's definitely what you want in a spot like this. And he definitely does have that upside.
Yeah, I mean, like you laid it out like perfectly. The matchup is just fantastic for him this week. No, Oakland, if you looked at the box scores this year, Oakland is loud. No, the fantasy QB2 both weeks. You know, Drew Brees had 31 plus points in week one. Matt Ryan had almost 28 fantasy points in week two. They're allowing the most fantasy points per game on an average basis in the first 2 weeks at 29.6. So far, they have allowed the most passing yards in the league at 819. Second is the Steelers at 695. So we're kind of, you know, lapping the field there. They've allowed 7 touchdowns, only 1 interception this year. And if you look back at last year, Oakland had allowed the second most top 12 fantasy quarterback performances, just one less than New Orleans. They had 9, New Orleans had 10. And that was 7 in their first 8 games of last year. So the defense kind of was a little bit better in the back end, but we've seen that the offseason changes to that Oakland defense hasn't really done much for them this year. So it's a defense we can kind of pick on until they get better. And like I mentioned, though, 7 of the first 8 quarterbacks they faced last year were top 12, and those guys were Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Josh McCown, Jay Cutler, Phillip Rivers, Geno Smith, who didn't even start that game.
But he is the GOAT.
He is Geno GOAT. And Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, Ben and Phillip Rivers, those are a couple guys you would kind of expect to be in the quarterback one tier in general. But you know, Dalton came on last year, but the rest of the guys, Flacco, McCown, Cutler, Geno, and like those aren't guys you expect to be, you know, bona fide quarterback ones every week. So I think that plays really well into Marcus Mariota's favor for this week. You mentioned the 24 implied points total, which is nice. You've mentioned the rushing upside. Now, Oakland allowed 5 quarterbacks last year to rush for 20 more yards in a game. And that was, you know, Geno, Teddy, Stafford, and Alex Smith twice.
Of course, Alex Smith.
Of course. You know, and then Mariota, he's always a threat to run. He had the 9th most rushing yards by a quarterback last year, 254. And that's even though he missed 4 games.
Right.
So when you can tack on that bonus of like 2 or 3 fantasy points to your total, that can, you know, maybe boost you from a mid-range QB2 to a low-end QB1. And no, Mariota's been close this year. You know, he finished as QB15, QB18 the last 2 weeks, but he scored almost 17 fantasy points in both of those games. When a team that's allowing almost, you know, 30 fantasy points to quarterbacks this year comes up against a guy like Marcus Mariota, I wouldn't be surprised if he reaches like 25, 30 fantasy points this week.
Yeah, the other factor at play here, too, is that Oakland is traveling across the country. I know that Tennessee isn't, you know, necessarily the farthest east they could go, but they're traveling pretty far for a 1 o'clock game on Sunday, which we've seen in the past is not good for that team. So it really does line up well for Marcus Mariota to have both the combination of a really nice floor, partially due to that rushing, but also due to the matchup. But he also has just insane upside this week.
Yeah, no, and if you were, I mean, this isn't going to make much sense at all or really going to be much of a factor, but I think it's, you know, an interesting stat. No, if you combine the 2 fantasy point totals from Drew Brees and Matt Ryan, that would be the QB1 on the season. Derek Carr, I mean, is currently the fantasy quarterback 3, so there's a potential that this game could be I would say sneaky shootout.
I 100% agree. And the over-under in this game is 46.5. It could totally be higher than that, and I would not blink an eye.
And like I said, the spread's only 1.5, and when the home team is favored by less than 3 points, it basically, you know, could be anybody's game.
Yep.
So if you're looking for one of those games where, you know, it can just be a high shootout fantasy goodness galore, this would be one I would target this week.
Yeah, I'd be totally down for that, and I think that's the correct line of thinking.
Hey, I know every once in a while I say something that makes sense.
Every once in a while, every sentence. Sal, let's be real here.
All right, so I think that does it for Marcus Mariota. We don't really have anything else to go over with him. No, if you have him, I think in one quarterback leagues too, he might be a guy that could be available on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I've seen him available in a couple leagues. Yeah, for sure.
Because his ownership is that high. So let's go on to our next recommended streamer of the week. That's Ryan Tannehill. Before we get into this one, I just want to give the listeners out there a bit of a warning. I was listening to the Living the Stream podcast this morning during my jog. And if we go back to 1 year ago, we know Nick Foles in week 3 is a thing. It kind of blew up on the fantasy football Twitter world where, you know, heading into week 3 of the 2015 fantasy season, Nick Foles was the recommended streamer of the week on the podcast from our good friends JJ Zacharyson and Denny Carter. The first 2 weeks, the Pittsburgh defense had allowed Tom Brady to be the highest scoring fantasy quarterback in week 1 and Colin Kaepernick to be the 4th highest scoring fantasy quarterback. So it's a little bit of, you know, context there. They'd each scored Brady almost 28 points, Kaepernick almost 27. So it felt like a safe bet to recommend Nick Foles as a streamer in week 3. I know about 98% of the fantasy world was laughing at them, but I was, and I was on the Nick Foles train.
I used him in daily fantasy that week.
I'm sure a lot of people did too, because the, you know, Nick Foles against Pittsburgh and his price tag. And then we know what happened in week 3. So we're going to find out if there is a week 3 curse like they talked about on their podcast this week, because their top streamer of the week is Ryan Tannehill, who we're going to get into right now.
Yeah.
So let's hope there is no curse, because I kind of want to know, want this pick to do well for the people listening who take our advice. So let's go into this one, Jim. Why is it that we feel like Ryan Tannehill is someone that we would feel safe streaming this week?
Yeah, I think that everything in the process lines up here. And I think this is the same thing that JJ and Denny saw in Living the Stream, as you mentioned. They're really smart guys. So if they're talking up Ryan Tannehill, it's something we should be noticing. And everything about this really does make sense here, even if Tannehill hasn't traditionally been the best, you know, quarterback for fantasy or quarterback for real life either. But, you know, a lot of our show focuses around implied team totals. We want to see how many points the offense is expected to score. And right now, the Dolphins have the fourth highest implied team total of the entire week, behind New Orleans, Green Bay, Indianapolis. Those are three really good offenses. And Miami right now is number four among them. Their implied team total, again, is at 25.75. Part of that is due to the spread being the Dolphins favored by 10. And I know that some people do worry quite a bit about a quarterback potentially with less volume with a heavy spread. But at the same time, if a team gets out to a big lead, a quarterback is very likely to be a significant part of that. And especially now with Arian Foster out, Kenyon Drake and Jay Ajayi taking over the rushing role, if they do get a big lead, it'll be partially at least because of Tannehill. So don't worry about that spread at all. It's actually one very conducive to good weeks from quarterbacks. And the other thing I like about Tannehill this week is that last year he was most efficient when he was throwing to Rashad Matthews, rest in peace. You know, now that he's been buried on the depth chart behind Harry Douglas in Tennessee. But also the second one was Devontae Parker. And we saw Parker get back last week, and he had 13 targets, and he has already added more expected points, going back to Number Fire's metrics. He has added more expected points to the team than any other player, despite missing week 1. He's at, I think, 3 point something, and Jarvis Landry is at -1 point something expected points added so far this year on every target. So Devontae Parker is a really good receiver, and his presence on the field is going to help out Ryan Tannehill. So I think a lot of stuff lines up well here. If we're looking at the RotoViz Game Splits app, which is a super helpful tool if you're looking for, you know, trying to figure out how a guy performs in a certain situation. Over the past 2 years, Tannehill has averaged 282 passing yards per game in the games in which Parker gets at least 5 targets, as compared to 253 when Parker doesn't get at least 5 targets. So I think that Devontae Parker's presence is a big difference maker for Ryan Tannehill. And looking at Vegas, everything lines up here. The matchup is good against Cleveland. I really see no reasons to be too worried about this one personally. Sal, what do you think about this?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I think I'll just start off here with the implied team total. You mentioned 25.75. The fourth highest of the week. This was a stat I found last week when I was doing my research on Trevor Siemian. It comes from Chris Raybon, formerly of Number Fire, who's now over at 4 for 4.
Raybon the GOAT.
Yeah. He said 70% of top six quarterbacks. I'm pretty sure this was in reference to FanDuel, DraftKings, so DFS, mm-hmm. but I think we can still apply it to our season-long teams. So he said 70% of top six quarterbacks are favorites with a team total over 24 and playing at home. So Ryan Tannehill checks off all three mm-hmm. of those boxes this week. So that's no one reason to be high on him. You mentioned no Devontae Parker's back. They also have no running game. Aaron Foster is going to be out this week, and they say he might be out up to 3 weeks if I read some reports correctly. They're not really that high on Jay Ajayi. No, Isaiah Pede might be getting some run. Damian Williams might be getting some run. If you look at the rushing stats this year, Ryan Tannehill leads the team in rushing yards with 52 yards. When your quarterback is your leading rusher, I think it's safe to say you really have no running game. And Cleveland allowed four quarterbacks last year to rush for 20 or more yards in a game. No, Mariota, Blaine Gabbert, Russ Wilson, and Alex Smith again. And so I think that, again, like we mentioned with Marcus Mariota, when you get some cheap production from the running game for your quarterback, that always helps boost up their fantasy total. And this is another good matchup. We've been targeting quarterbacks against Cleveland. So far, Cleveland has allowed the QB11 in week 1. That was Carson Wentz, who put up just over 19 fantasy points and ended up being the 5th best finish by a rookie quarterback starting in week 1 since 2002. Joe Flacco, who we recommended last week, he was QB19, but he did score just a smidge over 16 fantasy points.
And threw for over 300 yards, too.
Yeah. And the Cleveland Browns offense, I think that might be something we might have to be worried about is the Cleveland Browns offense, because the news came through the wire that Corey Coleman has a broken hand.
Yeah.
And with third round rookie Cody Kessler getting the start at quarterback. I'm not really sure how much that offense is going to be moving the chain, so that might be something to worry about. We see Vegas has the low over-under for that, but mm-hmm. I think Ryan Tannehill should still be able to put up some points both through the passing, through the and on the ground. They'll probably get out to an early lead and maybe sort of like slow down in the second half. So we saw Jimmy Garoppolo score over 21 fantasy points in the first half of a game last week. I believe Ryan Tannehill only had maybe 4 or 6 fantasy points headed into the second half of that game as well. And then he exploded for over 30 fantasy points. So maybe flip the scripts on those games,
right.
But still the same type of result. And just going back again to last season, Cleveland allowed the second most top 12 QB1 performances with 9 again, tied with the team we mentioned earlier, Oakland. And they allowed the second most top 24 finishes, so that gives us a little bit of safety and floor. And so far, Tannehill this year has been the QB17 and the QB7, so there's really kind of shows you his ceiling and his floor so far this year. So basically, a mid-range low in QB1 or a mid-range QB2 with the implied team total of 25.75. I feel like there's just safety in starting Ryan Tannehill this week.
I'm completely on board. And I think that is the bigger thing for me is the safety with him. We saw Flacco get behind last week, which is normally something that we want to avoid. But even then, he was able to put up decent fantasy numbers. 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. He did have the 2 picks, but those came pretty early on. So I think that when you consider that, I think that what Flacco did last week is kind of like the floor right now against Cleveland. And Tannehill has the advantage of being at home, too. So for me, I just think that there is a really nice cushion here for him. And I think that he should be able to do pretty well, kind of regardless of how the game flow goes.
Yeah. I think when you see an over-under 41.5
right.
and the team is favored by 10, you might think that there's going to be a lot of running involved. But
right.
we just mentioned how there really is no running game, and it's basically Ryan Tannehill. So that kind of just gives him another check mark in the safety column.
Yeah, and Marquise Pouncey, I'm not sure. It might be Mike. I don't know. I get the Pouncey guys mixed up. One of the Pounceys has missed the first 2 weeks for Miami. That probably doesn't help their rushing game. It doesn't help their passing game either, but it's not going to allow guys like Kenyon Drake and Jay Ajayi to tear it up. So I do think that this sets up well for a decent amount of volume out of Tannehill, regardless of what the spread is.
So hopefully we don't have a Nick Foles in Week 3 situation again. Not that we want to root for a Nick Foles in Week 3 situation, but the quarterback we're recommending you bench this week is Kirk Cousins versus New York Giants. Washington has an implied team total of 21, and they're 4.5-point underdogs to the Giants. So basically the opposite of what we're looking for in streaming candidates. So I'll let you go over the home road splits from the past year, since you know a little bit more about that than I do, Jim.
Yeah, I think that in looking at Kirk Cousins, you definitely do want to look at those home road splits because last year he was definitely better at home. And, looking at those or based on the start of last year, he's averaged a half an interception per game at home and 1.1 per game when on the road. That's a pretty big difference in efficiency. It leads to fewer touchdown drives, which is a concern. And I think that that's fleshed through in Vegas's look at this game, because they have put Washington's implied team total at 21 as they are 4.5-point underdogs to the Giants. And I know that we don't want to base a lot of assumptions off of a one-game sample, but the Giants looked really good last week against New Orleans. And I think that based on what they did this offseason, they added a lot of pieces to their defensive line. They added Jenkins in the secondary. They drafted Eli Apple in the first round. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie seems like he's a pretty good asset, too. Everything about their offseason was geared towards the defense, and through the first 2 weeks, it really does seem as if that has worked out well. So I guess I'm not super inclined to target them right now. The Giants' defense currently 10th overall in number of fires metrics and 11th against the pass. That's despite facing Drew Brees and, you know, Dak Prescott, who has looked pretty good so far. So I don't think that Kirk Cousins is a terrible option. I think that he is definitely due for some decent touchdown regression just based on some randomness that has gone against him the past few weeks. And going forward, I do like Kirk Cousins. I'm not super into him this week because of that low implied team total, that bad spread, being on the road. It's just kind of a lot of things that are red flags to me, especially with a guy like Kirk Cousins. What are your thoughts on this one, Sal?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one, too. I feel like he could have a good game this week, but I don't feel comfortable in putting him in my starting lineup. We mentioned that there's a possibility you could have quarterbacks like better situations, better options. And just looking at the ADP from this year, quarterbacks that were drafted either around or after Cousins was, you know, Andy Dalton, Matthew Stafford, Marcus Mariota, Tony Romo, rest in peace. So Dak Prescott, Matt Ryan, Ryan Tannehill, like Joe Flacco, Alex Smith, like those are all quarterbacks that were drafted. Actually, they're all quarterbacks that are drafted after Kirk Cousins. So, and if you were someone that went with a QB2, QB3 studs and streaming strategy, there's a good possibility you paired up Kirk Cousins with one of those guys. So I think if the option is starting Kirk Cousins or one of the quarterbacks I just listed, I would definitely go with the other option. But no, looking forward, he's got Cleveland, Baltimore, Philly, then Detroit in the next four games. So that's definitely a much rosier picture after this week. And it wouldn't surprise me if we had an episode dedicated to Kirk Cousins in the future. But the one thing you mentioned that I kind of want to hit on is just the improved New York Giants defense. Mm-hmm. No, this was a defense last year QB2 streamers were targeting. They allowed the third most top 12 performances to fantasy quarterbacks, and with 8, and they allowed the second most top 24 fantasy performances quarterbacks with 15. So almost every week you started quarterback against the Giants, you knew you were going to get at worst a fantasy quarterback 2 performance. So there's some nice safety in there, but they've completely flipped the script this week. Now, Dak Prescott in week 1 was a QB 25, barely scored 10 fantasy points. Drew Brees, I know almost 15 fantasy points is, no, not bad, but no, that's out of your quarterback 2 streamer, not your bona fide quarterback 1 who you start every week and never bench. I know, and Brees scored less than 15 fantasy points in 2015, only 4 times. So it kind of shows you just how improved that Giants defense has been. They allowed the most passing yards per game last year at a clip of 307.5. This year they're at 227. Wow. So it's 120 less passing yards per game, which if we do the math, that's 12 fantasy points. if you're playing it. No, wait, not. I'm thinking about running and receiving when you get 10. That's 5 fantasy points less per game.
That's a lot.
From the quarterback. Yeah, that is a lot. It's the 12th fewest so far this year. When you look at the defense, the low implied team total 21, the 4.5 underdogs. No, Kirk Cousins, he had a good game last week against Dallas, almost 19 fantasy points, but in a matchup you thought was very favorable in week one against Pittsburgh, he scored under 10 fantasy points, and it wouldn't surprise me to see that type of performance again this week, just based on the defense he's playing, the low implied team total.
Yeah, and again, for me, this isn't a long-term concern for Kirk Cousins. I do think that, especially in week four, he'll be a tremendous option again. It's just for me, I can't get super excited about him going on the road and facing a defense that looks to be as good as this one is right now.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like we mentioned all the time, fantasy football is a weekly game, and for this week we just do not like Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
All right, so that does it for the main streamers and the one guy we like. We should probably come up with a better title than the one guy we recommend benching. Like streamers is such a great name.
It rolls off the tongue. Homework assignment for anyone listening. If you have an idea of how to what to name our benching segments, hit us up. Let us know on Twitter what we should be doing with that, because I agree. I think we should name this something cool, and I think that it could be a nice little distinction for – apparently we're anointing people like the GOAT again if Tyrod did so well, so maybe it can be a happy name even. I don't know.
And if you're a company out there that has the word bench in your title, we're open to sponsorship opportunities. Right. All right. So that clumsy segue leads us into our rapid fire section of the week. This is just three guys. Now, we don't love as much as our streaming recommendations, but still feel that they are all in favorable matchups. This week we got Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco, and Alex Smith. Names that are quite familiar to the quarterback streaming crowd. So let's start off here with Dak Prescott, someone we had in week one as our top streamer.
Yeah, and I think that he should be pretty close to the top again this week. I really do like Dak Prescott quite a bit. The Cowboys are favored by 4.5 points over Chicago. And, looking at the possible streamers here for this week, Dallas's implied team total is the second best behind only Tannehill and the Miami Dolphins. So I think that this is a good one for Dak Prescott. Right now, he is the 12th most efficient passer based on NumberFire's efficiency metrics. And I think that when you look at Dallas, the only reason that Dak Prescott hasn't been a tremendous fantasy option so far is because they haven't been able to get him, in the end zone, whether it be passing or, rushing a whole lot. Once he, undergoes some touchdown regression, which I definitely think should happen, just based on the way he's performed so far, good things are going to happen. So I like Dak Prescott quite a bit for this week. He's looked better than I expected him to look so far, just based on an efficiency standpoint, again, from NumberFire's metrics. So going up against Chicago, that's not a great defense. Chicago is on the road going down to Dallas. I do have the same concerns about the ceiling for Dak as I had before, but I do think that he has a really nice floor that should result in a solid output for fantasy points here.
I'm with you there. I think the main thing we need to take away from it is that positive passing touchdown regression is coming.
Yep.
In the two games so far this year, he's led the team on 10 scoring drives, 6 field goals, 4 rushing touchdowns, one of which he did run in himself.
Correct.
No INTs. I believe the stack going around is 75 passes without an interception is a record for a rookie in their first two games. I guess we can pretty much have a stat for everything nowadays.
Right.
I think that was the infographic I saw being thrown around on Twitter. We mentioned it before, he almost had 2 touchdowns in week one. So once he gets those passing touchdowns, those fantasy points totals will boost up. This was a stat I took away from the Draft Day Consultants DFS newsletter for week 3, which hasn't hit newsstands yet.
Sneak preview.
It is a little bit of a sneak preview.
Okay.
It probably will be up by the time you listen to this podcast, but you never know. Maybe things leak. You can get this on iTunes the night of. So this is from Jason Shandell, who is also a NumberFire writer.
And also an amazing writer. Good dude, too. Jason Shandell's a good guy.
He is, and he's Canadian.
Yes, of course. Well, that's tied in with the great guy aspect.
So this ties in with the touchdown regression. He mentioned that the Cowboys have run 13 red zone passing plays in the first two games, which is the 8th most in the league. The league average for red zone touchdown rate is 21%. It was 23% last year. So, I mean, Dak Prescott is just set to bump that number up. And you can't go the whole season without throwing passing touchdowns in the red zone when you have that many opportunities.
Yeah, so, and it's not as if Dak Prescott has been bad. It's just kind of the randomness has worked against him so far.
And we've seen Chicago this year so far. They allowed almost 17 fantasy points to Brock Osweiler. No, Carson Wentz only had the 12, but we mentioned, though, the game script there with Ryan Matthews punching a couple in. So I think the implied team total is, you know, it's very juicy, but I find, like, it might also be a little bit of a trap, like we mentioned week one, where it could be a little too high, and that Vegas might be a little bit too high in this game. We saw that kind of was the truth. But just overall, I'm very comfortable starting Dak Prescott. And there's not really a whole lot of difference, I find, between him and Ryan Tannehill this week. So if you're in a situation where maybe you have a top-end guy, like maybe, you know, Kirk Cousins was the guy you drafted early. I picked up Dak Prescott from the waiver wire. You know, that's where a situation where, like, the lesser-known guy has a better situation this week. And in two quarterback leagues, you're going to have tough decisions like that. So I feel Dak Prescott's one of those guys where he's in a prime spot to perform better than more marquee names.
Yeah, I think that the one you threw out there, Kirk Cousins, is good. I would definitely rather use Dak Prescott than Kirk Cousins this week. And that's not necessarily going to be the case all the time. But for this week, given their respective matchups and implied team totals, I would totally roll with Dak over Cousins.
And no, having said that, Kirk Cousins is going to be fantasy QB1 and Dirk.
Right.
And then Dak will be fantasy QB32 this week.
Right.
It just tends to be what happens with this podcast. All right. So next up on the rapid fire list is Joe Flacco. He is playing the Jacksonville Jaguars, which this is another game I find could be a shootout on both sides. So if you're looking to target games in DFS that have a high shootout potential, I think Jacksonville Baltimore is in line with that one, just like the Tennessee Oakland game.
Yeah, the over-under is 47, which is really high, and the spread is zero. This is a pick-em right now. And I had expected to like Flacco a lot more coming into last week. But I know that we said that he was okay last week, but it still did concern me that he wasn't, you know, very good against Cleveland. And, you know, Jacksonville's defense, looking back to last year, their efficiency metrics were much better at home than they were on the road, which is why I was, you know, like, it's hard to, I guess, for me to get super excited about Flacco. I still think that he has a lofty floor. You're looking at that implied team total of 23.5, projected neutral game strip at 47. They haven't shown that they can, you know, run the ball effectively so far. They're 28th in number of our schedule adjusted rushing metrics. That means that Flacco is going to be throwing the ball in high leverage situations against a defense, again, better at home, but still not great. So I think that Flacco's in a good spot. It's not as good as I thought it would be heading into last week. So I think that he's definitely behind guys like Tannehill and like Mariota. But I still think it's a decent spot where you can plug Flacco in if you need to.
Yeah, like I said, I don't love the situation this week, but I do like it a lot. The one thing I'm kind of worried about, we mentioned with Miami not having a run game, Baltimore doesn't have a running game. But it'd be nice if Baltimore had, like, the threat of a running game.
Correct.
So that teams didn't think that they would just pass all the time, or at least if they had a running back in the backfield that they can throw to, where you could at least pretend that that would be an option.
Yeah, what happened to Buck Allen? I mean, like, I think he was an active week one, right? And he's just disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe he changed his name back to Javorius.
Javorius, yeah.
They kind of just didn't give him a new jersey in time. So
that's a great name, though. So I feel like that should just – Javorius is an amazing name. So I feel like that should only improve his performance, but he just disappeared.
But, like, the nickname of Buck is even better, though. Like,
that's true.
That's, like, one of the rare situations where you have an awesome name and an awesome nickname. That doesn't happen a whole lot. So it'd be nice if Joe Flacco didn't have to put everything on his elite shoulders, so that there was an option that there would be, like I mentioned, just a threat of a running game, because I feel like that would take some pressure off the passing offense and also make the defense going up against Baltimore have to figure out what's going to happen. But as long as Joe Flacco is the offense and he's going to be throwing to Mike Wallace and Dennis Pitta all the time, it does provide us with a nice floor, because we know at least they're going to be in situations where they're going to pass a lot. And this week against Jacksonville, this is a team that has allowed both the quarterbacks they face to be top 12 options. I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers and Philip Rivers, I guess. I mean, you could include Joe Flacco in that group. No, two of them have a Super Bowl. One doesn't. It's not. And Phil Rivers isn't the one with the Super Bowl. I know that doesn't matter for fantasy football purposes, but I just thought that was an interesting stat.
I've always maintained that Philip Rivers will one day get it done. I love me some Philip Rivers.
I mean, and he's the type of guy who probably will play until he's 50, even if he has torn ACL. Like, yeah. He just will never leave the field.
Once his 13th kid gets to college, then Philip Rivers will hang him up.
But, yeah, so far the Jaguars are only one of five teams to allow two top 12 fantasy quarterback performances this season. They're allowing the fifth most fantasy points to quarterbacks at a rate of 23.6. You know, 23.5 implied team totals, like, on the higher side. So, like, the signs are there for Joe Flacco to have another good week. I feel like we said that in week one and week two. Mm-hmm. And then he turned out week one didn't turn out so well. Week two, though, 16 fantasy points, even though it was QB19. So if he gets around 16, 17, 18 fantasy points, I'd be happy with that this week.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I think that's kind of like where I'm setting my expectations right now. But not, I don't think his floor is a tremendous amount lower than that either.
And then our last rapid-fire recommendation of the week is someone we love on this podcast. It's of the course. Alex Smith, the GOAT. I know in week one he was the GOAT, but in week two he was the WOAT. Is that what the young kids say nowadays?
Oh, yeah. I say WOAT all the time. Yeah, it's totally a thing.
No, anyway, he went 28 fantasy points in week one all the way to 3 fantasy points in week two. I feel, though, game script and defense played a big factor in that second week. You know, against Houston Texans in week two, they're one of only two teams this year to not allow a top 24 finish to the quarterback. So it's been quarterback 25 and quarterback 32 against Houston this year. The Philadelphia Eagles are the other team. So I feel like week three, Alex Smith is in a much better situation than he was in week two. Like, I might be one of the biggest Alex Smith fans in the world, but I wasn't going to start him last week.
Nope. I had no inclination to do so either. And the good thing here is that, you know, they're favored by 3. The implied team total is 23.25, and the Jets' rush defense is outstanding. So this could be a game where Kansas City actually has to throw the ball. I do have concerns here. The first one is the health of the offensive line. They were without both of their starting guards last week. If that's the case again Sunday, then I'm probably going to be moving Alex Smith down just because that's a major, you know, red flag there. But the Jets' defensive line is good, which could cause some trouble for Alex Smith. But even with that really good defensive line, I mean, they've allowed Andy Dalton and Tyrod Taylor just to light them up. So the Jets, even with that defensive line, they're 27th against the pass based on number of fires metrics. So it's not as if the defensive line is prohibitive to good games from quarterbacks. So I do think that Alex Smith is a good option here. I want to check the weather Sunday morning because it's looking kind of rainy right now. And I also want to make sure that those two starting guards are back because that could lead to some nastiness. But for right now, Alex Smith is a decent option.
And I was just going to mention the weather because, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week in terms of, you know, wind conditions. Right now, the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Helper lineup page has the Kansas City Chiefs stadium with a wind factor of 7 miles per hour. I know 10 is when you tend to get a little bit worried. So it's going to be something you're going to want to look at in the mornings when making lineup decisions, and in addition to seeing, you know, the status of those two guards.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of good stuff, you know, you mentioned the Jets have been kind of burned through the air this year. They're allowing the fifth most passing yards at 336.5. They allowed 366 to Andy Dalton. And Tyrod Taylor almost threw for 300 against him in week two, which is something we did not expect. I think I pretty much said on the podcast last week, do not expect a high passing total from Tyrod Taylor. And then he came out and just did the opposite of what I said. But I can't be mad at Tyrod Taylor. Like, I'm – even if the call was wrong in the end, I'm very happy that it was wrong because I – prefer to root for Tyrod Taylor when he's doing well in fantasy football.
For sure.
And so far the Jets are allowing the eighth most fantasy points per games to quarterbacks. I know it's only 2-game sample size, but no, it's better than allowing the eighth fewest. 23.25 implied team total, like you mentioned. And no, again, back to the rushing yards. We know Alex Smith has that little bit of upside baked into his fantasy points floor. So far, there are 5 quarterbacks last year ran for 15 or more yards against the Jets in 2015. Johnny Manziel, Andrew Luck, Tom Brady, Blake Bortles, and Tyrod Taylor. And Tyrod had 25 yards on the ground last week. No, Smith can add like 25 to 30 yards on the ground. That's 2.5, 3 fantasy points that you can add to his total, which I feel like kind of elevates him over some of the other options you might consider starting in your second slot this week.
Yeah, and I think that that's always the case with Alex Smith. I mean, I know that it gets talked about a good amount, how athletic Alex Smith is, but it still doesn't really get talked up as much as it should. He's a good athlete, and it really does flesh out in his fantasy production, and it gives him a better floor than he has in most situations. I'm not as sold on Alex Smith this week as Flacco and Dak, but I do think that he could put up a good performance against the Jets, especially if those guards are back once again.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's people in the fantasy circles that talk about it. I'm one of those people that talk about Alex Smith's floor based on his rushing yards and his rushing abilities, but you wonder how many people actually, you know, take that to heart. There's this one guy I follow on Twitter today. He mentioned how there's all this great advice people give out, but that nobody listens to. So it makes you think, is that the case with Alex Smith? How many people talk about him being a safe option because of the rushing floor that he has baked into his probable outcomes, but how many people actually kind of listen to that advice? So I feel like it's one of those situations where the good advice is out there, but there's not enough people that take it to heart.
Yeah, and that's definitely one that I pay attention to with Alex Smith, and it's why I've always kind of been a big fan of his. I had him in a good number of best ball leagues this year, which it sounds kind of weird for considering, his reputation, but I do look for floor, and he has that floor just because he is such a good athlete.
Third most rushing yards last year, 7 top 12 finishes. People like to make fun of him a lot, but there is upside now. We don't just make it up. It's actually there. the numbers show it. All right, so I think that's enough Alex Smith talk for this week.
Never enough.
I'm sure we'll get back to it next week and the week after that. We wanted to add just a quick segment this year, not this year, this week before we say our goodbyes. Week 3, it looks like there's potential for 3 new starting quarterbacks. Jay Cutler is out. That means Brian Hoyer is going to be starting for the Bears against Dallas. Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't officially been ruled out yet, but I saw the latest. He has been put with the doubtful tag. So it doesn't look like he's going to be starting. And Jacoby Brissett is going to be taking his place. He's going to be playing the Houston Texans. And then we know Josh McCown is out, and Cody Kessler is going to be taking over for the Browns against the Miami Dolphins this week. So we just want to make a note that there's 3 new starting quarterbacks this week. And it's kind of the norm for 2 quarterback leagues. Now, if you're new to the format this year, 2015 saw 53 different quarterbacks start at least one game. And if all of these 3 newbies do end up starting in week 3, that means we will have seen 37 different quarterbacks start at least one game after week 3. So just make note of that. We're not really high on any of those 3 guys if they do make a start this year. Cody Kessler has the best situation playing against Miami, but even I'm not really that comfortable starting a third-round rookie who just keeps losing more weapons in the passing game.
Yeah, I secretly love Cody Kessler as an actual player, but his situation is atrocious this year. So I can't do it. I may be the biggest Cody Kessler fan that exists just because his numbers at USC were low-key really good, but I can't do it right now.
Yeah, so it's just something we want to make note of for you people who might be looking to pick up a quarterback this week. If you got hit by the injury bug, you might be forced to start one of the guys. If so, I feel like Kessler probably has the highest upside of the 3. But again, I don't really feel comfortable starting any of those 3 this week if I don't have to. If I'm put into a situation where it's forced, I understand weird things happen in 2 quarterback leagues. I lost RG3 and then Josh McCown, and now Ooh. Brian Hoyer is my second quarterback. Well, so it happens.
I don't hate Brian Hoyer too much. I think that's a good pickup, but yeah, that's tough.
It's not a bad, I'm just the matchup against the Dallas Cowboys this week.
Correct.
In terms, I feel like that could be a game where it's just a lot of running, even though the Bears have shown they're not really doing so well on that side of the things. But we've just seen how the games have flowed this year against the Cowboys. I mean, long term, I'd be okay with Brian Hoyer because, he's got Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White and Zach Miller. But this week is not someone that's really on my radar. But like we mentioned, if you're forced to, it happens. We understand weird things happen in 2 quarterback leagues.
And I'm 100% on board with that exact explanation. Hoyer could be an option going forward, but this week, not exactly the most desirable option.
Yeah, I mean, if it was next week and playing the Detroit Lions or Week 5, the Indianapolis Colts. Week 6, Jacksonville. I mean,
that's actually a really cool schedule.
It looks good for those three games.
Yeah, that's not bad. So if either if Cutler gets back or if Hoyer takes down the starting job, that's an interesting schedule. We'll leave it at that for now.
All right, so that does it for this week. We'll just do a quick recap. Our top streamers of the week, Ryan Tannehill versus Cleveland, Marcus Mariota taking on the Oakland Raiders. Quarterback we're not that high on is Kirk Cousins against the Giants. And three players we like but wouldn't say we are completely in love with is Dak Prescott taking on the Bears, Joe Flacco against the Jaguars, and then Alex Smith against the New York Jets. So that kind of does it for our show this week. Jim, why don't you let the people out there know where they can find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, you can find all my work on numberfire.com, and I'll usually tweet about it as well on Twitter at Jim Sannes, J-I-M-S-A-N-N-E-S.
Perfect. And I say, we usually have a link to the NumberFire's NFL DFS helper page in the show notes. So it's something I feel like you should check out every morning when you're building your lineups, whether it's season long or DFS.
Yep.
I'm at 2QBFFB on Twitter. You can find my work and this podcast on 2QBs.com. Earlier today, just one quick plug for me. Me and my friend Brad Carey, the Fantasy Draw on Twitter, just released a fantasy football emoji keyboard app that was approved. You can find that in the Apple App Store under FFmoji.
That's awesome. I saw them on Twitter. I like the ones that I've seen, so I need to check that out.
And I didn't pay Jim for that plug, so no. That was 100% honest.
I saw them. You were tweeting about Tyrod.
I feel like is really like I didn't do any of the emojis because I don't know how to do that stuff. And Brad's the genius when it comes to the creative side in terms of creating the emojis. And like I just told him, it's like, hey, Tyrod Taylor, Tygo, and he created it. And I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah, they look really cool. So check that out for sure. I'm a big fan right now.
Perfect. So that does it for week 3 of the QB2 experience. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and Podbean. And someone even put us up on something I believe was called Podcast Republic. I'm not
all right.
Really sure what take that it. Is, but I mean, if anybody else wants to put us on any other platform, feel free to do so. That is a wrap for this week. Thanks for listening and happy week 3 streaming.
She's sorry, she's been stranded at these parties. And these parties, they start lovely, but they get druggy and they get ugly and they get bloody. The priest just kinda laughed, the deacon caught a draft. She crashed into the Easter Mass with her hair done up in broken glass. She was limping left on broken heels, and she said, Father, can I tell your congregation how a resurrection